This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. The heroin epidemic's taking a terrible toll on individuals and families, and it's also straining health providers, social service agencies, and the legal system nationally and here in Greater Cincinnati. People and organizations on both sides of the Ohio River have been working together to fight the dramatic rise in drug abuse and provide those who are addicted and their families with the care and help they need. Joining us to discuss the heroin crisis are Dean of the Northern Kentucky University College of Education and Human Services, Dr. Cynthia Reed, NKU Training and Development Center Director David Wilkerson, and Director of Inmate Addiction Services at the Kenton County Detention Center, Jason Merrick. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Cindy, Dave, and Jason, thank you for being here this afternoon.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks,
Cindy,
Mark.
As we get started, tell us a little bit about the events that Sam's going to be taking part in at NKU.
Thank you, Mark. I'd love to. First off, he'll be with us for 3 days, beginning on Monday evening with a keynote address that begins at 7 p.m. and runs until about 9 o'clock, and it's open to the community. We hope everybody comes and participates in that. The next day, he'll be participating in a variety of events, including a think tank that's hosted by my college, as well as a number of other units across the campus. Again, that's free and open to the public. And then he'll be meeting with a number of different community groups. All of this is really NKU's approach to hoping that his visit can be a catalyst for discussion and fuller understanding of the epidemic in Northern Kentucky, because too many lives have been damaged. Hmm. So we're hopeful that, in fact, this is our kickoff event for our new Health Innovation Center, which is not just a building, but it's a whole concept in how we do business at the university, where we integrate all of our different academic areas for collaborative or transdisciplinary approaches to addressing an issue. And this is the very first issue that we're approaching in this way.
So, Cindy, Sam Canone says that it's the collision between pain pills and heroin that's led to America's greatest drug scourge. What did you think of his perspective that he's taking in the book Dreamland?
Well, I think it's a brilliant perspective. Frankly, it's as we understand heroin addiction is probably one of the largest population health issues that's affecting our region right now, and his ability to show how it's really something that affects everybody, not people that you would ordinarily think would be the heroin addicts, certainly not the heroin addict situation from the 60s and the 70s as we used to think about it. But it's the neighbor next door, it's the child down the street, it's the business person 50, 60 years old who began through an addiction to pain pills. And because heroin's now cheaper and more readily available, people have switched over to that.
Dave, what about you? Your perspectives on what Sam had to say?
Yeah, I think Sam really puts a human face on addiction, not just from the addict's perspective, but also he puts a human face on the traffickers of opiates. And that's something you don't often see. There's so much stigma attached to drug addiction. These are one of the things I think we see that prevents people from going to treatment is the stigma. And one of the focuses of our two-day event hosting Sam on campus is to try to get at these issues related to stigma and to have providers from the community come in and articulate their view of how stigma is preventing people from getting treatment, but also is one of the darker sides of addiction, I think, for folks.
Jason, how about your perspective on Sam Canone's?
You know, I really appreciate Sam's perspective, showing the complexity of the issues mm-hmm. that we're talking about, that this is a very complex problem with equally complex solutions. And the evolution of a person who is suffering from addiction, it doesn't just start off with a needle in your arm. This is a process that starts in a very seemingly innocent format, using drugs from prescribed by a physician, seemingly doing the right thing, thinking you're doing the right thing, taking the medication that's prescribed to you, eventually turning into a progressive, chronic, potentially fatal disease.
Is that one of the things that makes it difficult to deal with, the fact that it builds over time? It's not just something that happens overnight?
It is. It's really frightening, actually, Mark, that, this becomes, it very much is a choice at first. You may do it recreationally. You may do it because it's prescribed. But it is a choice at first. But there's a line in the sand there. When you cross it and you don't know where that line is, where you become physically dependent, you start to experience withdrawal symptoms if you are to stop. And the shame, the stigma that's attached to that disease is that you don't want to tell anyone about that. You don't want to disclose that, hey, I'm now addicted and I don't know what to do.
Yeah, you're, a lot of this is from personal experience, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, you've been through this. Can you share that with us?
Sure. You know, I am the director of addiction services for Kenton County. I'm the board president for People Advocating Recovery. I'm a student in the master's program at NKU in the social work school. But most importantly, I am a person in long-term recovery from the disease of addiction. And what that means for me is that I've lived for almost 7 years, April 16th, without the use of drugs and alcohol. And the message that I continue to illustrate in my life and when I speak is that addiction is not a choice, and it's only the shame, the stigma, the discrimination that prolificates the disease. And with understanding, empathy, compassion, education, that's the way we're going to fix this.
Now, how personally were you able to overcome?
Well, I was in...
As you would say, I'm still overcoming.
How
did you reach this point?
Like I said, it's a complex problem with a very complex solution, and it's not just a cookie cutter.
So
fix.
No one thing will fit everybody.
It's not a one size fits all. For me, it was extensive, long term residential treatment, and I succeeded with an abstinence based model. Now that doesn't work for everybody. Actually, that works for a very small percentage of the population. 7 to 10% will succeed in an abstinence based model with this particular substance that we're talking about, heroin, opiates. 13 months and one day, residential treatment, that was the magic number for me. And what's important about that number is it was not dictated by an insurance company or by a provider. That was the time that I needed personally to develop a foundation of support, to find faith in a power greater than myself, to find purpose and meaning in life so that I could deal with the shame, the stigma, the discrimination that had occurred all those years prior, the dysfunction, the destruction, the path that I had created followed me every step of the way. And it took a lot of time for me to turn that into a tool that I could use to empathize and relate with other people. And then, and only then, did I find value in my life. And that sums it up.
And you're right. It is not an easy issue. It's very complicated. Yeah.
Indeed.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us in the conversation. What's the situation that you're seeing in Northern Kentucky, that each of you sees in Northern Kentucky as far as the extent of the heroin epidemic in the region?
Well, certainly one indicator is that at St. Elizabeth's emergency room visits in 2011, there were 252 visits for heroin overdoses. In 2015, that number jumped to 1,168. So exponentially, it's growing.
Surpassed car crashes, if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely.
That's amazing. 252 to 1,000.
To over 1,000. 1,168.
Yeah.
And that's really just an indication of people who come to the emergency
room. Exactly.
Right.
Just a very small percentage of people who are actually using. I think Jason makes a good point about best practices with this population. What is good treatment? What's helpful for folks? And a lot of times there are assumptions that one size does fit all relative mm-hmm. to treatment. But what we know from research is that it's really always a combination of things. It's never just medication-assisted treatment, which involves methadone and Suboxone, or abstinence-based programs or 12-step programs. Oftentimes, it's a combination of both. And there's some promise in our community, and some of the folks that are coming to speak on our panel during the think tank on April 18th address some of those issues. We really kind of picked community providers from different perspectives to see if, in fact, the participants can glean from that conversation that there are a range of interventions for this, but fewer best practices.
Mm-hmm. We felt that this is such a pressing issue and such an epidemic in our region that we really wanted this to be the inaugural event that we host for our Health Innovation Center. And to, as Jason said, to be able to approach it from many different angles to address the complexities involved so that our students are learning, our faculty and staff are part of those conversations, but obviously many, many different perspectives from throughout the community, both in the evening on the 18th, which is the keynote and panel, and then certainly on the think tank the next day, which will involve lots of different perspectives too.
Well, and Sam in his book and in the interview stressed the importance of community. He talked about how it was the destruction of the community in Portsmouth that opened the door for this problem in the first place, and how it was their final determination to reunite as a community that will eventually pull them out of all this. So talk about that some more, the importance of community in dealing with this issue.
Well, it's everybody's issue. We can't pretend anymore that it doesn't, that we don't all have a place to play in this situation to help make a difference, both in terms of helping to reduce stigma. So families and people engaged and using can seek the support and help that they need without feeling that by doing so they're going to end up in jail, or for families to be so embarrassed that they don't want to talk to their neighbors or let anybody know what's happening when they themselves really need some mental health counseling and some support services to help deal with the issues that impact their entire family. And of course, neonatal, you know, syndrome, and do you want to talk about that? I mean, that's a huge issue, too, with the babies that are being born.
Yeah, I think no one's more stigmatized than the opiate-addicted pregnant female. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of moral perceptions that take place relative to these folks when it's actually a medical problem. And there's lots of research that supports that it's a medical problem, that medications can be beneficial, if not best practice in treating it in combination with other treatments. And I think that one of the questions that came up as we were developing questions for our think tank panel was, does the community have the will to address this problem? And I think you really get at that question when you look at people's value judgments and moral perceptions on what this problem is like, and so there's a tug of war a bit with the evidence-based science approach and what people think could be more of a characterological or personality kind of problem that the addict might have.
And the morbidity. I mean, that definitely turns the angle of the conversation more towards what can we do. We have to do something. Too many people are dying. Too many people are suffering. So what works? What's worked in other areas? Why can't we try that?
I would say that, you know, I think our region has been somewhat slower to respond than other parts of the country, other parts of the world. And again, it gets back to, does the community have the will to address this problem? It's a scary problem. It again spends most of its time in the shadows. And posing that question to the panel and to the participants is a good question, and we hope for a good discussion around that.
When Sam Canones, Dave would describe this as being ground zero. Kentucky, Ohio, West Virginia, this region has been ground zero for this problem. Would you agree with that?
I would. And, you know, I was involved in providing opiate treatment back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And then it was, as Sam describes, it was about the pain pills. High percentages of our patients were addicted to pain pills. OxyContin had just hit the market and was being heavily marketed. I think this region, with the addition of the black tar heroin, as Sam has talked about, the introduction of that, that nicely filled the void left when regulations on pain pills increased, makes this, a very central place to focus on the problem.
And black tar heroin is not the heroin that we would equate with the heroin problem back in the 70s. This is a whole new product.
According to Sam, not something that crossed the Mississippi back in the day. You know, really kind of a West Coast kind of heroin that the folks he writes about in the book found ways to kind of market it further and further east.
It primarily comes from South America, Mexico. Post 9/11, it wasn't as easily accessible through Afghanistan and the Middle East. So the South Americans, using Mexico as a middleman, started pumping it up through Central America, and Mexico quickly tweaked their marijuana cultivation into poppy production, and then it was just a ready-made market here in northern Kentucky, specifically because of the the disease suffered through coal mining, and that was a primarily prescribed Oxycontin for their pain, and that produced thousands upon thousands of people suffering from dependency to these drugs. The cartels saw the ready-made market and flooded the area.
Well, and that's one of the things that surprised me too was what Jason said, or what Sam was saying, Jason, about how accessible heroin has become and how the traffickers are operating as though they are delivering a pizza. Mm. And this has to make the whole problem just all that much harder to fight.
Mm-hmm. It sure does.
Yeah, I mean, well, you have high school kids who can, even before the black tar heroin's potency increased back in the mid-2000s, and that enabled high school students to snort or smoke the heroin instead of injecting it. So you didn't have the stigma attached with being an injecting drug user. You could snort heroin at the party or snort pills at the party, and that was totally acceptable. So you didn't have that junkie label. The body's a funny thing. It doesn't really care how you get it.
So it really does come down to, I think, what Sam touched on first is it's about community, and it's about shifting our culture away from drug glorification and disease dysfunction into more health, wellness, well-being. It's real easy to point at law enforcement and say, hey, fix this. This is a problem. Why can't you change this? It's not as much about supply reduction as it is about demand reduction. We have to teach our children, our students, our communities that this is important information, and this is a very dangerous time.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU, and joining us to discuss the heroin crisis are Dean of the Northern Kentucky University College of Education and Human Services, Dr. Cynthia Reed, NKU Training and Development Center Director David Wilkerson, and Director of Inmate Addiction Services at the Kenton County Detention Center, Jason Merrick. You can join us at 513-419-7100. And let's start off by talking to Pete in Indiana. Hi, Pete.
How are you?
Good, thank you.
Hey, Pete.
I've been affected by this, not personally as far as me being involved in taking or drugs, but I have a foster daughter whose parents are addicted to opioids. I just recently had a cousin about my same age die from opioid overdose, and I have a niece that's addicted to drugs as well, opioids. And my comment was going to be something about asking about current laws, but as I listened to the conversation a little more, I find it a little bit hard to believe that we think that people are just ignorant to the fact that these things are harmful, so we need to continue to educate. I know that's important, but it always seems to be the primary focus. I do a lot of advocacy stuff here in Indiana to help folks with similar problems, try to help find jobs, try to help find programs and the like. And most of the people I talk to will not say that they've been addicted, because of prescription drugs from an injury or something. It's mostly most of the folks, and I've tried to track this info, is gateway drug. A lot of people say was just cigarettes in general, and also marijuana, and they progressed from one thing to another. How does this problem affect the fact that Ohio has got people really working hard to legalize marijuana? Is this going to hurt what you're trying to do to get rid of the opioids?
Pete, I would even challenge that one more step further and say that beyond the marijuana and the cigarettes, the caffeine, the sugar, and right down to childhood risk-taking. I mean, if some red flags are going up when you see an adolescent or a young adult out there taking extreme risk, those are all symptoms of addictive personality disorders, and very likely could lead to addiction. There also could be predisposed genetical issues that also could lead to that as well.
I think also that one of the issues that I had mentioned earlier, that the potency of heroin allows it to be snorted, and people can do things at parties that don't seem like what a drug addict would do. There's debate about gateway drugs, but you could smoke a joint, or you could smoke a joint with some heroin in it. Mm-hmm. And the issue is that the heroin has really a rapid addictive rate, and I don't think kids really know what they're getting into.
And the marijuana that is being marketed in the states that have legalized it is marketed with cartoon characters, bright colors,
right.
The names, like purple, pineapple, bubble goo, you know, it's seemingly marketed towards a adolescent or even teenage market.
Well, I think they've taken their cue from the alcohol industry that now flavors all the drinks with cider.
Yeah.
Take your pick.
And we've done such a great job of keeping alcohol and tobacco out of the hands of our kids. What makes us think we could do any better with marijuana?
Exactly.
But if I can, Pete, I think we all of us sitting here today agree with you that it's time to move beyond just educating people about it. That's certainly an important part of it. But that we've got to all claim this as an issue that we can be part of and help to find lots of different avenues to help lessen the epidemic, to help make a difference. And that's certainly what we're attempting to do next week by bringing Sam to NKU, is to have him come in for a talk for those that's all they can do, but certainly the panel, and I don't mean to diminish it, but to have a variety of opportunities, you know, as a kickoff, you know, for our Health Innovation Center, where we recognize this is a very important thing, and we all have a collective responsibility to make a difference.
Cindy, has there been a big shift in how we're addressing this, how we're viewing this whole problem? Have we made a shift from maybe looking at what's causing it to more how do we solve it now?
Absolutely. And, you know, part of the theme of what we're doing next week, too, is helping to eliminate the stigma attached to it. That, as we said earlier, that we've got to shift from simply talking about it, keeping it hidden in closets, so to speak, but to getting it out there in the open and making sure that everybody knows that there's something that everybody can do to volunteer in some kind of way to help get the word out, to help change people's mindset, to help get people to the treatments they need, to help advocate for the kinds of treatments that need to be available.
Let's talk with Pam in Wyoming. Hi, Pam.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Sure can. Go right ahead.
Okay. I have two concerns. One of them is that oral surgeons are providing these addictive pills for teenagers who are getting their wisdom teeth out. So that's one way that these kids, you know, get taken by surprise.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The other way of getting addicted is after childbirth, especially if there's surgery or significant tearing involved, the OBGYNs are prescribing OxyContin for pain. And, you know, there are other pills that would work, perhaps ibuprofen. And I think that a lot of the young people who are getting addicted as teenagers and or, you know, in their 20-something childbearing years, are really innocent victims of the pharmacy marketing tactics to their doctors.
Jason, you want to take this on, address this?
Yeah. I would love to say just one thing about both of these callers that have something that everyone should have. The children that are being prescribed opiates for dental surgery, after giving birth, mothers in Pete's family that has one person that's already suffered from an overdose, others in active addiction. Everyone, all the doctors out there, all the pharmacies really should make naloxone or Narcan available to everyone who receives a prescription for any form of opiate pain medication. This is a safe, effective antidote to accidental overdose. And it happens. It's not just heroin. We have accidental overdoses occur all the time. So they're available at the Kenton County Jail. If anyone is interested, you can call there and we can get them to you for free. Wyoming's quite a drive, but Anyone in the area is welcome to come by.
Well, Cindy, Dave, and Jason, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dean of the Northern Kentucky University College of Education and Human Services, Dr. Cynthia Reed, NKU Training and Development Center Director David Wilkerson, and Director of Inmate Addiction Services at the Kenton County Detention Center, Jason Merrick. Sam Canones will be speaking at Northern Kentucky University Monday evening at 7 with a book signing at 6, and a panel discussion will immediately follow his talk at 7. And as part of the Think Tank series, the NKU College of Education and Human Services is going to present Community in Crisis, Confronting the Stigma of Addiction, featuring Sam Canones on April 19th, and that will run from 8:30 in the morning until 3:30 in the afternoon. You can find a link to more information about both of these events at wvxu.org.